broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia, just a few miles from Washington, D.C. This is the Software Quality Today podcast presented by TX3 Services, where we empower life science companies to digitally transform their software testing. This is a podcast for industry professionals about the trends and challenges of software quality testing, computerized systems validation, and the people who are leading the way. We'll be providing you with interviews from special guests as well as news from thought leaders at leading life sciences organizations and vendors alike. Today's guest, Lydia Casillas, is here as an individual and independent subject matter expert, and the views and opinions she shares are not necessarily shared by her employer, Micro Focus. And now, here's your host, CSV expert and VP of Strategic Solutions at TX3 Services, Dori Gonzalez-Azevedo.
Welcome to another episode of Software Quality Today, presented by TX3 Services. I'm your host, Dori Gonzalez-Azevedo. Today, I'll be interviewing my friend and colleague, Lydia Casillas, regional leader for the Southeast Enterprise Accounts at Micro Focus. Focusing across both the application delivery management and IT operations software portfolios. Lydia has had a diverse career, spending the last 20 plus years in IT software management, sales, professional services, consulting, and education. Holding various positions with a few different application delivery solution providers, partners, and currently at Micro Focus for the last 3 years. She's also one of the founding members of SHINE, Sisters Helping to Inspire and Nurture Excellence at Micro Focus, which is an employee resource group with the mission to empower women, engage men, and enhance the company's success. SHINE seeks to inspire men and women to reach their full potential and enrich the work environment by building a culture of openness and inclusion. She and I share a passion for uniting and supporting these initiatives in our personal and professional lives. As always, enjoy our conversation. Well, welcome to Software Quality Today. This morning, I have the pleasure of talking to Lydia. How are you today, Lydia?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Dori. Super excited to be here with you. This is a lot of fun.
So today, we are going to get into some fun topics that I know you and I like to talk about. But first, I'd like to turn over to you if you can tell us a little bit more about your background, how you came to be here, and what your role at Micro Focus is today.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I'll start off with I've been around this space for a long time. A lady never tells her age, but it's been a few decades. Something I was thinking about the other day is, you know, that I'm actually pretty proud of is, you know, that I've had the extreme pleasure of being in front of a lot of large organizations, rolling out hundreds of applications into productions, educating thousands of individuals globally, and selling millions of copies of Micro Focus's automated testing tools over my time. So I've done a lot. I've been at Micro Focus now for about 3 years, and those 3 years have flown by. A lot has happened. But when I initially joined, I started off where I was most comfortable with, and that's in the channel. And a good part of my early career working for a number of amazing partners was dedicated to the channel. So had a lot of great relationships, friendships that I've built over the years. And so that kind of immediately translated into my first role over at Micro Focus. I was initially focused in the Southeast region at, you know, supporting the channel, collaborating or gluing a lot of our account managers, our customers, with our go-to partners and solution providers. And I did that for about a little under a year. And then I had the pleasure of working with an awesome team here in the Southeast. And then I moved into strategic accounts and learned a lot and got to an opportunity to meet a lot more different customers, different partners. And so now I am actually, as of earlier this year, a position came up back into the Southeast role where I am now actually the Southeast regional leader for our enterprise accounts. So we've got about 100 or so enterprise customers that my team and I support, ranging all across the Southeast, Mid-Atlantic, mainly focused on existing customers that have a footprint of our application delivery and IT operation solutions.
But you've been with Micro Focus products for a long time.
Oh, yeah. So Micro Focus, legacy HPE, legacy Mercury Interactive. So pretty much that whole history channel there.
Yeah. So you've seen the whole kind of space grow over the last 20 years. And what I find interesting about that is that that's been a up and down roller coaster, right?
Yes, grow and evolve and change. And some products, you know, thrived, and some of those solution areas, you know, kind of dissipated into the clouds. But yes, I've seen a lot happen all over the last 20 years.
Well, so what's exciting and new today?
There's a lot of new things. I mean, that's a loaded topic, actually, right there. I think we could probably do a whole series on what's new today. Mm-hmm. You know, it really depends, you know, because if I look at what's new, I mean, there's obviously a lot of trends changing in the different vertical spaces, a lot of things going on in healthcare and fintech and retail. You know, there's so many different, you know, I guess nowadays, if you look at it, there's so many different rules, legalities, security measures, compliances mm-hmm. that, you know, are now so much effort is being put into that, and when folks are building applications. So there's so much to think about now. And so testing, managing, monitoring against all of that, yeah, I mean, it's mind-boggling and overwhelming. So I don't know. I kind of think like it being part of Micro Focus, I'm kind of in this little bubble in some ways because, you know, in the past, I've worked with so many different customers and supported, you know, their application rollouts, and got a chance to see some pretty cool new apps launch and go into the market. Now I'm more helping customers, providing them with the tools and solutions to help their rollouts. And so I'm not as much in the trenches, but I do get to see a lot of things change. And so I'd see, like, as far as kind of, I was thinking about this and what have I seen a lot of lately. And, you know, one of the interesting things that I've seen is consolidation. There's so, I work with probably about 100 top companies here in the South. And a lot of these larger organizations are buying other larger organizations or smaller organizations. So there's a lot of mergers, acquisitions going on. And I was just counting the other day, I think I have at least a dozen and a half accounts or more that are going through some type of M&A activity right now.
Wow, that is impressive. And that's across the board, across industries.
Yeah, across industries and everything. So, you know, when, you know, every time.
What do you think that's about? Is it consolidation? Well, I mean, from a company perspective, but part of that consolidation is now just, you know, streamlining IT function.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think from their perspective, they're doing it, you know, to capture marketplace and, you know, to consolidate or build their customer base. But it's not only merging technology, it's merging apps, it's rationalizing, you know, those apps that are redundant, you know, for their business. You know, it's also merging assets, saving cost. So I've been getting involved in a lot of conversations around that for those companies, because they're trying to figure out what's the best way to rationalize.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, because over the years in life science specifically, right, that's kind of an area of expertise that I've played in mergers and acquisitions, of the process changes mm-hmm. when you merge thing, right? Like, and so-and-so might have one version of Micro Focus and another one has another version of Micro Focus. And then how do we combine those business processes to a unified business state, right?
Yep.
And consolidate their tool set. So is that what you're seeing today? Like wanting to reduce?
It could be reduce. It could be grow. It could be, so, you know, just like in that same scenario, two companies could come together and then they realize, oh yeah, I have a lot more of what I need. Or, you know, one company has, you know, a dominant focus and that's their enterprise solution. Whereas another one may have another competitive solution and it's a lot smaller scale, you know, and so they may want to look at displacing that other smaller solution and then growing and expanding and making it more at the enterprise level for an organization. So it varies. Mm-hmm. It depends on the size of the customer and how mature their, you know, application delivery models are. So that's one trend I see a lot. You know, the second is, you know, I mean, I think this is a trend that's been going ongoing for years, but is moving into the cloud. You know, some of our solutions are pretty intense to manage, monitor, maintain. You know, I mean, like ALM, Quality Center, PPM, these solutions can be massive for some companies. And it's massive for them to, you know, have the resources in-house to manage them, or, you know, to just even the hardware alone. So, you know, in a lot of cases, customers, you know, they just want to use the application for their testing projects.
I mean, I see that as a huge trend as well, right? But that is the number one ask is how can we offload this? What SaaS model works best? You know, whether it's Micro Focus SaaS or TX3 SaaS or whatever SaaS, I do see that as a growing trend, and also not understanding all of what that means.
I absolutely agree with that.
Who's responsible? Like understanding that, like, you know, there still need to be involvement and change control from the customer side, right? And it's not just all on the provider either, right? There has to be communication and dialogue, understanding terminology on the same side, that we're all speaking the same language, right? That's been a challenge.
Yeah, well, that and, I mean, even things like security and SLAs and consumption models. I mean, that's one of the other things that we're seeing a lot of questions asked. It's like, okay, well, you know, I bought X number of licenses initially 10 years ago, but, you know, I have projects that peak up and down. So just accessing it, you know, for a temporary period, we have to be able to provide more flexibility. And so I think that's the other piece that comes with moving to the cloud is just having flexibility from a consumption standpoint.
Yeah, I hear that a lot.
Yeah, so there's, I mean, I could probably go on listing a ton of trends.
Well, so there's one other, so there's one other trend that I see, right, is this uptick in test automation. And the the desire for rapid automation, right, and the, how do I call it, the unknowns and the intangibles that need to happen in order for that to actually flourish and take root within an organization, and not understanding there's a culture shift in there. There's also an increased spend across the board in order to get test automation launched in a particular way, in that vision way. Have you seen some of that on your side?
I have. And it's funny because the way you're describing it, you know, I'm thinking my mind is leaning towards two major aspects of that. One is the trend around AI. You know, being able to test against those unknowns, and you know how that so much of our technology is taking a turn for AI, and that that's huge right there. The other is, and I'm seeing this is actually almost a whole next gen type of trend is around value stream management. That is, everyone wants to see value on something. And so I think that's kind of the next gen of testing is around value stream management. And it's a new terminology. I think, you know, we're toying around with it from a marketing perspective. We're seeing it, you know, our customers are asking, you know, how we're positioning ourselves around value stream management. But I think that's kind of the next gen of DevOps and automated testing.
And can you define that a little bit better for us? What do you mean when you say value stream management?
So value stream management, it's more of a lean business practice that kind of helps determine the value of overall software development, delivery efforts, and resources. It's a way to improve the flow of value to an organization while managing and monitoring software delivery lifecycle end to end. So that's kind of the definition of value stream management. And again, I think because it's the next gen of, of DevOps, or, you know, SDLC, you know, has taken its new turn. But I think that's kind of the way that automated testing is going to take a turn, because it's all about seeing value in what we're delivering and how we're delivering it and who's delivering it. You know, so I think that that's going to be kind of that next phase of where testing heads towards.
One of the things that I struggle with some of our customers is to actually get, you know, real data, like, because they haven't necessarily been tracking any metrics. So part of what I hear you saying about the value stream management, right, is wanting to streamline that and get a better outcome. But in order to measure that, we also need to know what's been happening, you know, on the ground, and where is the dysfunction or lack of uptick or whatever those things are. And I'm struggling to get some of that information. And it's not because they haven't wanted to, it's just that they didn't know maybe it was really necessary in order to do these sorts of calculations. A lot of folks want to know, well, what's going to be my ROI? I want to understand, you know, you're asking me to spend X amount of money, where is going to be my ROI? And it's hard to argue that or even give them figures around that, because they haven't actually calculated what it's either been too decentralized as an organization to be able to do that, or it just, you know, just scraping by to get features and you know, applications out the door, and haven't been paying attention to those sorts of things.
I definitely see a lot more of the latter, what you just mentioned, because you know, everything is about speed to market and getting it out the door and rushing into it in some ways, where the days of, you know, actually sitting down and creating you know, or soliciting requirements documentation and then aligning, you know, those business flows to those initial requirements, and then attaching your tests to those requirements, all of that just kind of has been pushed to the side, you know. And I think that because of that, you know, more folks are not keeping track of or managing the data of what happens, first version, second version release, you know, keeping track of the history around the defects that are encountered. How did they fix it? You know, I just, you know, everybody's so quick to get, you know, a test put together and make sure it works and check off the boxes and move on.
It's demands from all sides, right? Because it's not that they don't want to do that detailed work. It's just there's so many demands coming in. But one of the things that I try to help our customers do is really get down to the data, right? And to look at what is the important things to capture, right? It would be wonderful to capture everything, but it's over, you know, information overload. There's no way you can possibly parse through all of that. But what is the actual, you know, in life sciences, we talk about what's the intended use, right? And what are you actually using the tools for in order to capture the actual data that's needed to make decisions? And I think historically, I think as big data came, you know, a couple of years ago, kind of big data, like everyone wanted to capture everything. And now we're left with too much information and the sense of needing to also perpetuate that from here on forever, right? And at least in life sciences, the FDA doesn't want you to capture everything. They want you to capture the right things, right? But in order to capture the right things, you kind of have to slow down the conversation to say, you know, what is your data map? What are you actually doing with this? And where are the decision making? Because regardless, someone is making a decision somewhere with that, right? It's not just a number crunching exercise, right? Tests are written, and not every test is the same. Right. And how to evaluate the right level of testing. The other, you mentioned earlier around security, briefly, that is also, I'm seeing a big trend in more emphasis on security than ever before.
Absolutely.
Which it absolutely should, right? And I think what that is helping perhaps make folks rethink what are their important requirements? Because I, you know, up until a couple, you know, years ago, it was very app specific, mm-hmm. right? What this app can do or not do. And now, frankly, what an app does or doesn't do is really kind of irrelevant mm-hmm. in my mind, right? Like the security around that and how you're handling your security, that is actually of utmost importance right now. Apps, for the most part, are, you know, out of the box features, and you're going to use them or you're not going to use them.
That's exactly right. Right? Yeah. You definitely know, the complexities are in some cases overwhelming, you know, when yeah. it comes to pulling in all those. But I absolutely agree. I think security right now is one of the biggest challenges that our customers are facing across the board. You know, I mean, whether it's focused on their apps or their environment or their users or their data, that's the number one challenge that I'm seeing customers, you know, bringing into the forefront of every conversation.
Yeah. So with that, so how are some of the ways in which Micro Focus is positioning themselves to kind of address some of these big challenges today?
Well, you know, I think with all of these trends, there's always going to be challenges. You know, I might be too optimistic, but I look at every challenge as an opportunity. It's sort of the reason why mm-hmm. I'm in sales. If there's a problem, I want to fix it. And let me look at my big bag of goodies to see what the best solution is and to help fix and address
those
challenges.
I love it.
You know, I see all these challenges as a reason for us to be in business as we are today. I think Micro Focus has over 300 products. It's scary to think about, but, you know, each mm-hmm. of our tools provide a solution to a lot of these challenges. And continuously, because we have to continuously stay on top of these challenges to better support our customers that are and what they're experiencing. But, you know, as you just mentioned, I would say that our biggest challenge that our customers are facing are related to security. We have an entire cyber res organization with a suite of some pretty amazing tools to address a lot of most of these security related problems that our customers are facing, whether it's, you know, data application or, you know, environmental or user related type of security issues. But, you know, even in other areas of our portfolio, every single product has to go through an extraneous amount of security measures. And our customers are asking for it. You know, I mean, even in something like, you know, moving a customer, you know, from an ALM on-prem environment to a SaaS environment, I mean, we go through some pretty extraneous conversations with their security team, our security team, you know, just to make sure that, you know, all the checks and balances are related. So, you know, security is probably one of the largest components that we have to address. And that's probably how we have to one of the biggest solutions that we have to address those type of challenges. But, you know, whether it's application challenge related or, you know, help desk or monitoring, you know, I mean, like I said, we have solutions for all of that, you know, and how to address those challenges across the board. Sometimes it's a little overwhelming because I have to constantly stay on top of, you know, mm-hmm. What are the challenges out there that, you know, all of our customers are facing, and then making sure that my goodies can support it.
mm-hmm. Yeah, because it does change fast. That's for sure. TX3 as a strategic partner of Micro Focus as well as others, I try to, I liked what you said before about having your goodie bag. Mm-hmm. Like I tried my best to have that open tool bag mm-hmm. for what the customer really, like, what is the customer's need, and really listening to that and trying to reframe it and make sure that it's understood. They know what they're asking for, right? As well as what are all the tools that are available that could help solve their problems, because it's not just one.
Exactly.
Right? It's a combination of many.
Yeah, we try to focus it on more about the solution fix versus a product, you know, matching up to their problem. It's more of providing an end-to-end solution that is going to be able to support them for the long haul too, not just mm-hmm. a temporary patch or Band-Aid.
So would you have any advice for companies and customers out there that are wanting to advance their software testing programs?
As far as advance them to, yeah, I mean, advice, I think, I could come up with, you know, cliff notes, I think, mm-hmm. depending on the scenario. You know, there's a lot of customers that I think, you know, one of the things that I used to do, pretty consistently in my past was actually look at the overall maturity of a customer and where they are today. As far as, you know, and I kind of almost give them a scorecard, you know, based on what I saw, you know, what are their process? What are their tools? You know, how are their, users, adapting to their overall testing life cycle? So kind of looking at, you know, where their initial state is and then helping them build a maturity model on, where to go to or what based on their goals, on where they can achieve some advancements or maturity. And then, you know, over a period of time, because, you know, obviously, you know, the tools are going to help manage and, keep it all together, but it's the resources and the defined process that help move things along. So you can implement some great tools, but if you don't have the right resources or the right process built around it, you may not get very far very fast. So one thing that we would do is, you know, kind of take a look at that, give some assessment, give some suggestions on, you know, how an organization can mature through their advancements of using the right solutions and building out that automated testing practice.
Cool. Awesome. That was very much similar to how I try to work with our customers to, as well. I think that's a big part of any transformation for any organization. Let's shift focus. Do you mind?
Yeah, no, not at all.
All right. So one of the other things about our relationship and how we came to be was it was really kind of centered and focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, and near and dear to my heart, as we're ending the month of October, we had Indigenous People Day, which is finally being nationally recognized. Wrapping up on Hispanic Heritage Month, we're moving into a Native American Indian Heritage Month, and my child is blessed to be on both sides of that. So as a Native American and Puerto Rican young person in the world, I think it's really important for us as a community to be able to speak to that and to get out there and use our voices. And I know you do that as well. So I'd love to open this up and let you share some of the work that you've been doing. And so our listeners can learn more about
that. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I will say as a I'm also equally passionate about diversity, not only internally at Micro Focus, but as well in our industry and IT, and just you know, being a woman of, you know, Hispanic background and in leadership for over 20 years, it is a huge passion of mine as well. I feel at times that I don't do enough, and I always want to do more. You know, and it's I want to do more just from an education perspective, educate, you know, some of the younger women who are coming up and looking at, you know, jumping into the IT industry and, you know, what challenges they may face coming in. So that is a big passion of mine. I don't even know where to start, to be honest with you. Tell you what we're trying to do.
I know. It feels like for years I've been doing this so much in my own community, and then just recently how it's kind of taken root, which is wonderful, in a much more broader open dialogue. And for you and I that have been doing this for years, it's kind of like, well, it's about damn time, right?
Exactly.
So I'm welcome and embrace that. But I know you've the program internal at Micro Focus is pretty unique, and I haven't heard that from other organizations. And I was wondering if you'd like to share a little bit about how you guys think about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so we have a quite a few employee resource groups at Micro Focus. And I would say that the employee resource groups, ERGs, we call them internally, have really taken a launch, I'd probably say, in the last 2 to 3 years. You know, so one in particular is called Shine, and that is more spearheaded by the women of Micro Focus. And I can't really take too much credit in being someone that started it. A good friend of mine who's been in this industry for many years, Lori Fontaine, she actually was one that, you know, kind of really put that program together internally at Micro Focus, seeing a need that we, you know, just didn't have enough women in leadership at Micro Focus, and really kind of gathering up this sisterhood, if you will, to kind of help promote the women within to really, you know, speak up, create awareness for the women in Micro Focus, and then also kind of build and help each other, help mentor some of the younger women, help get women from where they are and grow within, and help some of the women that, you know, we want to push to take a more leadership role within the company. So SHINE, it stands for Sisters Helping Inspire and Nurture Excellence. Today, we have close to well over 600 members internally at Micro Focus around the globe. So we have a big segment in here in the Americas, and then in EMEA and APJ. And we have kind of a global awareness component to SHINE. And then each region also has a individual region and site. Now we have chapters. So here in Atlanta.
Wow. That's very exciting.
Yeah, it is. It's fun too.
Yeah.
It's fun. But it's not only women, it's men too. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. also there to help men understand, you know, as a woman, you know, what we're dealing with in not only the organization, but in IT and in general. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that I've noticed too is the men that participate, they participate because they have daughters and they have women or wives that work in IT, or and they want to understand, you know, that to help support those women in their life. So, right. So anyway, it's been an interesting opportunity to help kind of not only support, manage, participate that group here at Micro Focus.
What are some of the benefits that you see out of that sort of program that have come, you know, and actualized, you know, like, can you give an example or two? Like maybe.
Yeah. Something? I could again, give lots of examples. So, you know, one of the biggest benefit is just creating that awareness internally, and a network, for, women to talk to, you know, share. We actually host, not monthly, sessions, webinars, virtual events. We used to do it in person, but you know, now we're right. virtual for the most part, but, we bring in authors and, you know, give them education points. But one of the programs that we're, actually going to be launching this new year is, you know, helping with mentorship, mm-hmm. you know, taking, you know, younger women and helping provide them with a mentor of someone that, you know, has been doing this for a while and helping them, you know, advance in their careers. One of the other big benefits is that because of this awareness, you know, it's sitting up there and it's being seen and addressed through leadership. And I think that's mm-hmm. really important, you know, because most of our leaders, you know, a lot of times it's just kind of not really thought of, you know, oh, wait, there's one woman on our leadership crew, you know, like, oh, right. is that a problem? Yeah, that's a pretty big problem, you know? So I think that this SHINE has helped create awareness for that. And mm-hmm. also to, you know, just in general from a diversity component, I mean, you know, now more than ever, besides Micro Focus, you know, diversity is a big thing across all of our customers too. Now it's getting mm-hmm. to a point where a lot of our customers are asking us, even when they're purchasing our solutions, what is Micro Focus's position on diversity and inclusion. And, you know, a lot of organizations now, you know, some of the big ones, I won't name names, but, you know, they have to actually show that a large percentage of their spend is geared towards a diverse or minority-owned business of some sort. You know, they have to show a percentage of that, you know, their overall spend for the year. So, you know, they're asking us, you know, what's our, are we woman-owned, minority-owned, you know, of some sort of diversity background, because, you know, they have to, you know, show that they're working with other organizations. So even though we're not classified as a, you know, we don't have those type of certifications, we can actually show that we do take, you know, a lot of consideration in our diversity and inclusion program. And it is a very large focus. And I mean, I think we even share a lot of that detail in some of our annual reports and stuff like that, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you invited me to do the Women in IT talk, it was so affirming, right? To have, I don't know, what was it? 50, 40, 50?
Yeah, I know we had around 30 customers, and then with partners and some internals, I think it was like around 50 people.
That conversation was just so affirming for so many different, I had women reach out to me privately after that, you know, and want to talk and share. And I think it speaks volumes to the initiative that you're talking about, mentoring, right? So personally, I've done mentoring throughout my career, and not in formal capacities. It's always been very informal, but I think more formal programs to be able to further that that dialogue and deepen that relationship, right? Because it's evolving and changing, and so much is just a conversation, right? And if we have those conversations in real time rather than when it all bottles up and things happen, right? But to have an ongoing regular conversation. So kind of what you were saying about having monthly meetings and all this sort of stuff, if making it more regular as part of our day-to-day rather than this peak in when things are not going our way or when we're hit with a major challenge, right? But having that avenue, you know, whether I reach out to you on a weekly basis or whoever, right? Just to have that open dialogue more regularly across the board, I think is really important. The other thing that you were saying, which I thought was interesting, is that men were allowed to come to Shine. And tell me a little bit more about that and how, because often still I'm sometimes the only woman in the room. And what are some of, like, do you have one or two things that, that men can, how can they show up to be more supportive?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, I always like, we'll host these events and we'll have upwards of, you know, 300-400 people that'll attend, you know, virtually. And, I always look through the attendee list and just seeing who's there. And I love when I see a man listed on there because it just shows that they want to take part and that they want to understand and that they want to learn, you know? And, you know, at first I thought, all right, you know, maybe some of the women might not be as vulnerable and as, you know, get willing to share some of these details because they don't want to, you know, upset anybody or hurt anybody. But you know, I haven't seen that yet. But one virtual event that we had recently, we did a panel, and it was actually earlier this year for International Women's Day in the March timeframe. And, you know, so we actually put a panel together of about four or five different folks internally at Micro Focus, ranging from different levels of their career. Some we have a very large intern program in EMEA. So we had one of the new interns come on. We had, you know, a senior leader, woman that, you know, had been with Micro Focus for 10 plus years and, you know, held many different positions. And then I actually invited, one of, my male coworkers that I work with, that, you know, he has, you know, and one of the discussions around this virtual event was related to, you know, what we've all been dealing with for the last, you know, year plus with, you know, all the pandemic situations and working from home and how it's changed for us, you know, mentally, mm-hmm. physically, everything. And so I invited this gentleman to this call because I wanted him to share with our other women, you know, what he's dealing with at home. And, you know, he's, you know, married, his wife works just as much, if not more, than he does in some cases. Mm-hmm. He's got two little babies under two little girls under, you know, 3 years old. And, you know, a lot of his struggles was, you know, he would have to get up and get the kids ready and, you know, take them over to the, you know, daycare. And his wife had to leave early. So he was the one that was taking some of those traditional roles of, you know, kind of the what we all are perceived as the women roles, you know, in a lot of cases, mm-hmm. you know, I shouldn't say we all perceive, but, you know, a lot of other people perceive right. them. And, yep. And so, you know, I asked him to join and to share kind of what he's dealing with. And it was very interesting, not only for him to share all of, you know, that with all the ladies, but then he was just like, I have just so much, he would say that he had just so much more respect for understanding and what a lot of women go through, because it's not just us coming to work every day. It's us being moms. It's us being wives. It's us being, you know, friends and socially mm-hmm. having to fulfill. And I don't know that a lot of men realize that. So I think, mm-hmm. I think it was actually very fun, but anyway, so not only did he come and attend, and I mean, we had so many women afterwards just talk about this gentleman and what he shared with, you know, with everyone. But then we started seeing a lot more men get involved, which mm-hmm. was actually pretty inspiring, because it's like, okay, yeah, great. I'm happy to educate a lot of these mm-hmm. men and, or that, you know, our women could help educate these men on that subject alone and what it really means for us internally at within this Shine membership.
That's very awesome. Very inspiring. I mean, and I know that there's for every hardship out there, there's lots of stories like that too. And so your optimism and always is good to get us through those times. And I try my best to take that as well with me as I go along. So today is you know, kind of getting to know you and getting to know Microfocus. But your, you know, wisdom and years of practice, I also wonder if you can share with our audience kind of, you know, future thinking about, so what are this, you know, what is the state of, what's necessary moving forward as an organization, or what are some of the things that folks need to focus on as they're building out their programs?
What's necessary? Future is
the future.
Yeah, the future. I wish I had a crystal ball, right? That would be fun. You know, I think that one of the biggest things that in general I've always had to keep an eye on is change. We all have to experience change quite a bit. And it, you know, I think as we've learned watching and being involved, you know, that change is never easy, number one. Mm-hmm. Sometimes change is forced. Mm-hmm. How do we adapt to change? And now more than ever, how do we adapt to change fast? Mm-hmm. And then still be able to prove value and return and save costs and do all those other things that our businesses are asking of us. So, you know, I think if I have a crystal ball, I mean, I'd love the cliff notes on how to handle change, you know, really well. And I think mm-hmm. that for, you know, as far as advice to customers is just always being, you know, one step ahead of that change. You know, I mean, I know it's very difficult, but, you know, we can kind of see some of the things coming, you know, and surfacing and you know that it's going to change or impact whether it's a project related or our business or you know, our focus, just being prepared for that change, and having a plan for that change. You know, I think, you know, when it comes to things like software testing, you know, we've seen it change a lot over the last 20 years. You know, it started off as being, you know, a very cool, fun thing. Got to see all the new apps before everyone else did. And, you know, we had to build a plan. But, you know, then right. you had so many things change for us, you know, it, you know, how customers plan for it, how they built it out, how they expanded within their organization. So I don't know that anybody really adapted to that change and evolution, you know, the best way. And then once they did, or once they put a lot into it, you know, it was like, boom, here comes another change and we have mm-hmm. to go start all over again, or, you know, yeah. expand and stuff. So I think that's yeah. the biggest thing I would say to, as far as anything, is just handling and dealing and managing change.
So it's interesting. So you, part of what I hear you're saying, without saying it, mm-hmm. right, is, you know, and I dare I say the word agile, in here. but right. But so you just described that mm-hmm. in a way without using the term. And I use that term carefully yeah. in certain areas, because I feel like when we start labeling things, we want agile this mm-hmm. and agile that. It's much, much more than that, than a software development methodology, right? Yeah. What you've just laid out in the ability for customers and programs to adapt and evolve, right? There's this scientific mindset sort of way, is that you do have a plan, right? And that plan has to change. And you get data, like you work it for a little bit and you change it. And you work it for a little bit and you change it, right? And how that all comes to be. And I... it gets back to some of the terminology that I hear some of our customers use in wanting a desired state to be quote unquote agile. Mm-hmm. And that means a lot of other things, not just around particular software methodology. So that was what came up for me as you were describing hey, that.
You know what, Dori, we work so well together, because I feel like I'm just thinking of stuff off the cuff and you help put it into perspective. and you know what, when Agile first came out, I look at it as it was there were so many variations, so many different, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. versions of it and stuff like that. And, you know, like, and then I see, you know, then the next gen thing comes out, and then, you know, mm-hmm. it's then, you know, comes out with its own versions and variations and stuff. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I probably was thinking exactly that, using agile, you know, without using the term agile.
Yeah. Cause it's in that, as you describe it in terms of change, it's really hard. Mm-hmm. Like when you look at the people, process, technology, as well as the culture, right? The four kind of key elements that mm-hmm. you talked about earlier and that I espouse to as well, like all parts of that have to be changing in sync. And some may be in synchronous at times, right? But with the forward movement. And that forward movement right now, as you also mentioned, is so rapid.
Yep.
Right? It's so rapid that we can't really even predict what's in a month or two.
I have a hard time keeping up, to be honest with you.
Right? I mean, and I think COVID also kind of helped spearhead a lot of that, right? And it wasn't just kind of everyone dialing back. It was like everyone had to pivot. Everyone had to change. And so it's not just one area or industry anymore. It's every industry has to be able to adopt that sort of mindset, right? To be successful.
That's exactly right.
Not just to successful, also to be whole, right?
To keep up with their competition. I mean, nowadays, you know, if you look at, you know, retail or, you know, even in the entertainment and travel, I mean, mm-hmm. I think COVID hit the travel industry, we all know, very hard, but they had to adapt to change or else,
right.
you know, or else.
Yeah.
And that was one of the biggest challenges I think that industry faced.
Yeah. And that's exciting to me. So that's just who I am by nature, right? The entrepreneur and scientist in me, like that is just really exciting. Not everyone has that same perspective.
Yeah. Well, and like so, I said earlier, hey, look, it's a challenge and I look at it as an opportunity.
Yeah. And so I see also the, you know, the struggles and the divides across, you know, some organizations and how the collective pendulum needs to move. And last year we did a podcast on, you know, moving the needle, right? And it, that needle, that pendulum needle also shifts and back and forth, right? So it's a constant kind of back and forth and shifting forward. But it needs to get done. And now that, that swing of that pendulum is just going so much faster than anyone ever really could have predicted, right? Which is also, again, extremely exciting. The technology that's coming out there and some of what our customers are making and developing in-house are just, you know, spaces that they weren't in a year ago at all.
Yeah. And like I said, it's
that's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. I do have to say, not to scare folks, but it's like for me personally, I feel in some way like if you don't keep up, you'll you know, not only get behind, but you'll become stale too. And so as I sit there and look at, you know, all of those changes in the last 20 years, and now that I'm kind of ripe in my age in this industry, I'm like, holy smoke, you know, if I don't adapt to this change, or I don't, you know, continuously keep myself educated on what's coming or what's going to happen or how to adapt to it, I could be old news and, you know, someone else is going to come in and, you know, gleam right by me.
Yeah. So that's a really good point, because one of the things I struggle with is also how to impart my decades of knowledge to the new upcoming. And because a lot of what I do on a day-to-day basis is a lot of critical thinking and analysis, right? And that's something that just doesn't easily translate, right? It's not something that you're taught in school. You know, yes, I have a degree in lots of chemistry, but not everyone's the same, right? And how do you teach those critical thinking skills? How do you break down stuff enough for someone to really understand how to evaluate risk? You know, it's hard.
It is.
Do you have any thoughts?
It is hard. And you know, it's funny because you know, I was kind of thinking at first, I also struggle with that as well. I have a lot to impart on someone or many people, and I want to give it to them all. You know, give it to them all. Like, sit down.
I'm a giver by nature. But I just don't know what's important yet to give.
Yeah. Or you have so much, you don't want to overwhelm them. But, you know, so, you know, I've often thought, well, you know, maybe I should write a book or you know, maybe I should, you know, record myself or something. But who has time for that these days? And then, the other day we were actually talking about this internally as a team, because, we're required to do some book club type scenarios, and we have a couple of books and that we have to read. And, you know, we were talking about the current book and, you know, where it was a little dry and that we weren't really picking it up as easily because it didn't, you know, gauge our interest. Whereas, you know, a prior book, it held our attention because it was more storytelling. It was more in the weeds as far as like, here's this scenario and this happened and you putting yourself in that character and, oh my gosh, I've been there, or wow, yeah, I didn't even think about that. And so anyway, then someone brought up a past book, The Phoenix Project. And I'm sure being in this industry, everybody's read The Phoenix Project by now. But, you know, it was like, oh yeah, no, I read that. That was a great book. And it had the storytelling aspect of it. But you know what? The Phoenix Project is already, what, like 8 years old, you know? And if you think about it, a lot of the content in there is, you know, kind of needs to be revised, you know? It's like, it's a change so much. So how do you impart that wisdom, that information, and then not let it get stale? That's the other key is, you know, because I mean, I don't know. I don't plan on working for another 10 years. I'm hoping to retire before then, but I would like to give as much as I possibly can and it not be stale.
Yeah. I completely agree.
That's funny.
Awesome. All right. Well, Lydia, I think we're going to probably do this again at another time because we have a lot more to talk about.
Well, this has been fun. I've actually enjoyed myself just in chatting with you, Dori, but also just giving that information that I have to impart, you know, to whomever's listening. So
I enjoy that. Thanks so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime.
All right. Take care.
Thank you, too.
Thanks for listening to Software Quality Today with Dori Gonzalez Azevedo. If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll pass along our web address, tx3services.com, to your friends and colleagues. And please feel free to leave us a positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. Also, be sure to check out our archive section on our website for previous episodes. You can also check us out on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter at TX3 Services. This has been a TX3 Services production. Join us next time for another edition of Software Quality Today.